Riders up!
This is Riders Up with Frank Lyons and John Gaver, your one-stop shop for all the Sunday morning racing information that you need. Let's get this party started. Here's Frankie.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to ESPN 1300 AM Sports Radio, home of the horses. Alongside of Stage Door Johnny, I'm Frank Lyons, your host. And Johnny, we've got a great show today.
Frankie, good morning. Morning. Nice to be here with you. Great show.
You got your coffee, John?
Got coffee. Second cup.
Yeah. I
had to come in here on the muscle. Chomping at the bit, as they say. Great show, buddy, today. Some awesome guests. Sandy Hawley, not only a Hall of Fame rider in the United States, but also in his native Canada, won about 6,500 races lifetime. It'll be awesome to talk to him. Your buddy Brian Lynch.
Yeah, Brian
Lynch.
Coming
off a big weekend in New York, is also on the air. And he's got some pretty good insight as well on some young horses in his barn. And he's an interesting character. Rugby player.
Yeah.
Boxer. Yeah. Bull rider. Assistant to Bobby Frankel. I don't know how you make that transition from bull rider to meeting Bobby Frankel. That seems like two different circuits.
Well, we'll hear all about it, and I'll tell you in a few minutes.
He's a good guy. We appreciate him taking
You just don't want to mess with him.
Don't want to mess with him. Not going to. That's a resume there that I don't think anybody should.
And also we have Brendan Walsh, the young, I'll say young because he's a lot younger than me and maybe quite a bit few years younger than you.
Younger than myself as well.
And he's doing fantastic right now, and we'll check in with him on his horse multiplier that was in the Belmont and horse honorable duty, and we'll find out just a little bit about Brendan's life.
Coming off a big spring summer meet at Churchill, was on a tear there at the beginning of the meet. Kind of tailed off a little bit towards the end, but very high percentage trainer. Good job, hands on guys. Worked in a lot of different facets in the thoroughbred industry.
Well, it's a very difficult thing to maintain that status of winning a lot of races all the time. They go through ups and downs, and but the two trainers that we have on today, Brian Lynch and Brendan Walsh, you can't say that about them. They don't ever go into times where they are questioning everything that's going on and they can't win races. So it'll be fun to talk to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can't say that about Mike Hushin, who is going to come up a little bit here in our news segment, a lifetime 20% trainer for 42 years.
That's
incredible to pull off.
That's amazing. And Mike is about due to retire.
Has his last two starters scheduled to run today at Belmont Park. So this was the final curtain call for him. He's a really good guy. I've had a chance to meet him a couple times. Former assistant to Alan Jerkins. Really stand-up guy. Will do anything for you. Give you the shirt off of his back. Great trainer.
Well, you know what? You can tell me all of that, but I don't know whether to believe you on a lot of things that you say.
You don't have to.
For the truth, I'm going to go over to Milena Balbo, who's going to tell us the news.
Thanks, Frank, and good morning, gentlemen. This week, veteran New York-based trainer Michael Hushin will close out his career that has spanned nearly five decades with his final two entries. As John was just mentioning, they will be Jupiter Rising and the also-eligible Voodoo Song that are both slated to go postward in today's sixth race on the closing day of Belmont Park's 2017 spring-summer meet. Hushin, 68, who battled leukemia in 2015 but has since received a clean bill of health, said his immediate plans were to spend some time with his family and to play golf and fish in Saratoga Springs, New York this summer. Before striking out on his own and saddling his first winner in 1975, the native New Yorker served as an assistant trainer for Hall of Famer Alan Jerkins. Hushin has over 1,400 career wins and has maintained that impressive 20% win percentage over 42 years. I think like anybody my age, I've been thinking about it for a while, Hushin told the New York Racing Association's publicity staff. My owners have all been wonderful, and this is the right time for me. That's all. Dortmund, a multiple grade one winning son of Big Brown, who was retired from racing back in April, is back in training with Art Sherman at Los Alamitos Racecourse. Sherman said the imposing chestnut has been in light training and could have a timed workout sometime in the next 30 days. The multiple graded stakes winner Gunavera will point for the August 26th Grade 1 Traverse Stakes at Saratoga, according to trainer Antonio Sano. But he will not prep for the race in the July 29 Grade 2 Jim Dandy Stakes at the Upstate New York Oval. Instead, Sano will look for a race for the Son of Dialed In at Gulfstream Park. And on the international front, Coolmore's Roly Poly, a warfront filly trained by Aidan O'Brien, scored a front-running victory in the July 14 Group 1 Falmouth Stakes at Newmarket, covering the 8 furlongs over good terrain in 136 flat under jockey Ryan Moore. In last year's Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf at Santa Anita, Roly Poly finished 9th as the favorite, beaten just 4 3/4 lengths for all the money. And in France, His Highness the Aga Khan's Shaquille won the Group 1 Judmont Grand Prix de Paris Stakes at Saint-Cloud on July 14th by a nose over Permian. The homebred son of Dalakani covered the mile and a half over good ground in 2:30 and 2 under jockey Christophe Soumillon and improved his lifetime record to 2 wins, a 2nd, and 3/3 from his 6 lifetime starts. Trainer Alain Deroyer-Dupré said the October Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe at Chantilly is a possible next target for the sophomore colt. And finally, we say goodbye to Diane Nelson, one of the top female riders in the sport of thoroughbred horse racing, who passed away in early July and was memorialized in a service in her native New York on July 10. Details of her death were not made available. Nelson had over 1,000 career wins, including 8 graded stakes races, with her mounts earning over $19 million. The best horse she rode was the 2005 Grade 1 Prior Stakes and Grade 2 Comely Stakes winner, AC Ducey, for trainer John Morrison. And that's what we have this week, gentlemen.
Well, thank you so much, Milena. And some pleasure. Sad news and some decent news there. Gunavera going for the Traverse.
Going to stay at home and look for a race there. Probably a good idea. I'd like to try. It's deep waters up there, Frankie. That's, I don't know. You probably want to just fire your best shot, especially in those high-end races. And he's a nice horse. I've always liked him. He's an honest horse that tries every time.
Well, you know what? He is so worth the money that they paid for him, because they paid, I think, $16,000 for him. He's by Dialed In.
That's correct. And I believe that Antonio Sano picked him out of the sale himself and, liked something about him, had a good walk or presence about him, and he's done a great job with him, and he's certainly outrun his price tag, that's for certain.
And we want to say the best of retirement to Mike Hushin, a longtime trainer for Barry Schwartz, the co-founder of Calvin Klein.
Absolutely. He's had some nice horses over the years, mainly in New York, doesn't really kind of venture out of there. I know the Lumber Guy comes to mind, one of the more recent. I think he was a Grade 1 winner for him, but very high percentage trainer, as Milena mentioned, and even better person. Learned from one of the best there is in the game, and Mr. Jergens.
Yeah, rest in peace, Dan Nelson. And I guess we got to go to break again here on WLXG ESPN Radio 1300. Riders up. Here we'll be back. On the line right now, we have a very special guest and a very close friend of mine, Brian Lynch. Brian Lynch, who's coming off a classic week. How do you feel about what's happened in the last week with Oscar Performance, Brian?
Yeah, no, it's been a great week, Frank. I started the spring in a couple of naughty subpar performances, but with the goal when we put him away after the Breeders' Cup this year was to get him to the Belmont Derby. So pull that off was, gets us back on track.
Yeah, he was morning line favorite in the Belmont race, but he went off at like 5-1. Did you? Were you very confident, or were you a little nervous going into that?
Well, no. It was the way he won the Pennae Ridge and how he trained in between, and his last couple of days leading up to the race, gave me the confidence to say that handicapping the race, if he was end up playing out like it did, if he made the lead and dictated the terms, he's going to be tough to catch. Inevitably, that's the way it played out. He, a little bit of a gulp there at the beginning when he broke that flat-footed, but when he got up through there and he I seen the half come up in 49 and change, 3/4 and 14, I knew they'd have to be, they'd have to really be a good horse to catch him from then, come off them fractions.
He's a really game horse on the front end. You've done a great job with him. It seems like a lot of your horses like to run kind of on or near the lead, and I respect that. I know you don't really want to change a horse's running style, but you've had some really nice horses that like to run on the front end and seem to can stay a distance of ground. Is that just the stock you have, or is there any kind of particular method in the way that you to train turf horses or dirt horses?
No, I think it's just, you know, maybe, you know, unforeseen to me, it may be something that we're doing with them, but, yeah. You know, it's funny that there's a few of them there that are like that, too. You know, Heart to Heart, he's a tough horse. You yeah. leave him alone, he's tough to catch.
And, yeah, it took the words right out of my mouth. He's a really nice horse.
You know, Unchained Melody the other day and the Mother Goose, I mean, she's just a filly that's just got a big high cruising speed, and handicapping that race too. I said to Joelle, you know, I'm not telling you to take the lead, but if she breaks on top and she's comfortable and you're on the lead, then, you know, leave it be. Because I think this filly's a good filly in the making, and she, you know, she's just got such a big stride and a big, powerful filly, and that's where she's comfortable.
Now, she's a smart strike filly, so the two turns is going to be no problem. What is next for Unchained Melody? Is the coaching club American Oaks, is it?
No, I'll give her a little bit more time, Frank. I'm going to head towards the Alabama with her and, you know, try and give her a little, you know, that she ran hard there the other day, and I think coaching club might have been coming back a bit too quick for her, so we'll space that race. You know, I feel like we could, you know, more than capable of trying to go into the Alabama to get the mile and a quarter.
I love the fact that you skip races, because that is something that Bobby Frankel, who you learned a lot of your trade from, used to do all the time.
Well, I learned a lot from Bobby, but I studied you in your younger years. Yeah,
you've read my memoirs.
Yeah, I did. When you weren't around, I used to sneak in your office there. And read your memoirs.
Well, you know, Lynchy does know that I wrote a book, Different Ways to Spell Bob. And so, Lynchy, take us back to before you were training. When you came to the States, you actually came here to ride bulls professionally, right?
Right, yeah. Well, I grew up around the thoroughbreds, but as you see my waistline, Frank, I've never got to be a jockey. So, I always got into riding, you know, younger horses and breakers, and as a kid I sort of graduated towards the rodeo scene and got very good at riding. No, I won't say very good, but I enjoyed riding bulls as a late teenager and in my early 20s, and, you know, the U.S. was the place, you know, if you're going to make it, you needed to come over here. So I got over here and I rode on the pro tour for, you know, about 7 years. And
you rode for... You wrote for Gary Lafue, right?
Well, Gary Lafue was probably like my mentor, as Frankel was to us, and Gary was a 1970 world champion, so he was long done from riding when I started in the late 90s, so late 80s, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as that wound down, I sort of got back to a... something we've always had a passion for, you and me both, is racehorses.
Yeah.
So we got down, you know, kicked off down at, you know, annoyed the stewards at Del Mar enough one summer until they gave me a trainer's license and put a couple of clients together and a couple of horses and, you know, graduated up there. I started San Luis Ray Downs and built a little stable from there. A lot of it in the early stages was just breaking horses and pre-training horses for other people, and then eventually sort of got a couple of people that were going to get behind me and went on up to Santa Anita, and then had a little Santa Anita meet there, won a couple of races and got a few stalls at Hollywood Park, and racing secretary said, well, we're going to put you in with a guy who was an ex-jockey, and he's starting training too. And I went over to put my weapons up, and there were some black weapons there with WW on them. So that's where we all become friends, Frank, myself, and Wesley Woolard.
Yeah.
It's been a long-term tight relationship since then.
Yeah. Do you miss those days, Lynchy?
Yeah. I mean, we had a lot of fun growing up in Southern California. We all learned from each other and what to do and what not to do.
Yeah. I met Lynchy in the paddock, because the very first time I met Lynchy, there was about 20 horses schooling in the paddock at Hollywood Park.
Right.
And the only other horse that I looked at that looked good to me was Lynchy's horse. We'd never talked to each other. And we just made conversation. I said, hey, who's that horse? And he said, what was the name of the horse, Lynchy?
Reva Ranger.
And he ended up winning the graduation at Del Mar. And he broke his leg right after the wire. Kentosormo was on him. And, it broke my heart to see this guy that I just met. He didn't have many horses. This was a very good horse. And he broke his leg, he got up and ran off with his leg hanging off. And it was just heartbreaking. But, we've been... Al's wife was married to Neil Adams. She was married to Steve McQueen for 13 years before Al. We knew Neil very well. Brian knew Neil like a kind of mother, really, to you.
Yeah.
Even in Los Angeles, the racing world's small.
Yeah.
I'm going to kind of switch gears a little bit, Brian. You've had a lot of great owners in the relatively short time you've been training, the Ammermans and Frank Stronach, Adina Springs, but Jim and Susan Hill seem to have been a longtime supporter of yours, and they have a really great farm here, Margot Farm, which has an awesome training facility. I know that you've been there many a time. How valuable is an asset like that to have at your disposal in your program?
Jim and Sue have been certainly some people that aren't going anywhere in the business. They built Margot Farms up and turned it into a fantastic, I think, world-class facility.
It's incredible.
For sure. Very horse-friendly. There's nothing ostentatious about it. It's all about the horses, the pastures from the tracks to the barns, maintain the old tobacco-style barns, but when you go inside them, they're pimped out to be beautiful stalls. And I think the whole program's good there. I think the rehabilitation program that they're breaking, that they're legging up, it's a full-service facility.
Absolutely.
And Jim and Sue have been, they're big supporters of the industry. They're always avid buyers at the yearling sales, and they're back there every year. And I've been fortunate enough to have been with them from virtually the get-go since they came on board in the horse business, and I've been fortunate enough to have, quite a few nice horses for them, and hopefully there's quite a few to come. So they're certainly trying to do it the right way, and they're wonderful people to train for. They take the good with the bad, and, they're behind you 100%, and
no questions asked.
Seem like great people to train for.
Yeah, there are many, many more good years ahead of us.
The big news is, of course, that you got married a few weeks ago.
Yes. Hey, congratulations.
I never knew that. To your longtime partner in Erin, she's also assistant trainer. And how important is Erin to your operation?
Well, Erin and I have been together for about 11 odd years, so I figured she's done 11 years of hard labor.
Yeah.
Erin's a critical part of it. She's sort of the backbone. She ran the Woodbine division for many years, and she does all the business side of things and keeps the operation rolling, and she's a great support to me through the good days and the bad. There's more bad than good in this business, it's great. My son's really got involved in it now. It's pretty cool. He's come of age, he's 16, he's really into it. He's avid pedigrees and handicappers.
That's really cool.
It's got Frank's approach. Don't keep your head dirty, but enjoy, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like Lynchy is the one who gave me the best advice one time. He said, never take life too serious because none of us are getting out of here alive.
Never true. Yeah,
that's true.
So now, have you many two-year-olds, Lynchy?
We've got about 25 that were just rotating down from Saratoga at the moment. There's still a few that haven't come in yet. And so we've got 25 stalls up there for the meet. So, you know, we left a few up there that are going to run early in the meet. And we've rotated all the older horses that fit the first book. And the rest of the two-year-olds come down and we unload them on trucks. Today, and at the end of the morning, it was sort of cool walking around the barn. I've been watching them all spring, and at this stage, they're all starting to come together and shape up and start to look like little race horses.
So, sure.
Nice ones and nice them.
Could you give us one or two that you're particularly fond of?
Well, I like the little horse we ran in the Sanford on opening weekend. I mean, he's overanalyzed. I thought he ran very game when it fell my first time out. There's a nice Badger Silver filly there, but Ali just got beat a Spidgin in her first start at Belmont. She's to run back for Airdrie Stud.
Uh-huh.
And there's a Blame filly up there. Her name's Gemini. She seems to be doing everything right, and we left her up there because she's very close. And but she's a big, strong, healthy, you know, big, athletic-looking filly, so look forward to her. You know, there's a few there from Calumet, but English Channels that I've had a lot of luck with, but, you know, they don't look like they're going to be too early, but they're very athletic horses, and look forward to, you know, watching them develop.
And what about Meantime and Lightstream? What's the story with them?
Yeah, Meantime, sort of, you know, I probably threw him to the wolves there the other day in the Belmont. Probably, you know, the mile and a half wasn't his trip, and he's a jackal foot. He can get very hot. And like I said, that, you know, once he got out in front of that crowd and there was a helicopter hovering over the post parade, and he sort of had a meltdown, felt like he could have. He sort of held his breath throughout the race and he ran in spots. So just regroup with him, give him some time off. He worked back half mile today and he'll be pointed, you know, he's still an A other than, so I might just completely regroup with him and
big good looking horse.
March him through his first condition at least and then have a crack at another 3-year off stake later in the summer. But seems to the time we've given him, he looks like he's benefited from it. And Lightstream, she's on a rag numbers and equibase numbers, and that's she's run the best races lately. I think she just run into better horses.
Yeah.
So, you know,
hopefully
we can find a spot that you know she could knock out another graded stake before the November sales, because inevitably she'll go through the ring and as a broodmare prospect, a racing prospect before the end of the year.
Yeah. Well. That's nice to hear all of that good news, Brian.
That's great insight on the young horses. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us.
You say hello to Aaron and Nicholas, and you know I love you, bro.
We love you too, Frank.
And we will talk to you here real soon.
Jack, a scratch on the head for me.
Yeah, okay. Brian Lynch, everyone. Thank you very much,
Thank
Brian
you.
Lynch. So now we're off to break here on 1300 AM ESPN Radio. Riders up here with John Gaver, Frank Lyons. We'll be back.
Boy, as the field turns for home. Ancient Title on the outside leads by a head. Group Plan on the rail right there second. Wirt McAllister is third. Golden Murr fourth. Hatchet Man on the outside and Arby's Boy on the rail and through the stretch. Group Plan coming on again on the rail. It's Group Plan on the inside and Ancient Title on the outside. 5 lengths farther back, Arby's Boy is third. A 1/16 of a mile to the finish. Ancient Title on the outside in front ahead. Group Plan on the rail second. Ancient Title.
Welcome back. And that was the voice of Marshall Cassidy, I believe.
We think so, yeah. I'm pretty sure that it is.
But I know that the rider up there was the man that we have on the line right now, Sandy Hawley, everyone. Sandy, welcome to 1300 AM ESPN Sports Radio. Riders Up is our show. How are you, Sandy?
I'm great, Frank. Thank you very much. And boy, that was an oldie but a goodie. Ancient title. Holy cow.
Yeah. What was he like to ride?
You know what? It's funny. I was just talking about him the other day, and he was probably the most powerful horse I've ever had an opportunity to ride. He ran with his head down just a little bit, but he almost pulled you out of the saddle every time he took a stride. So he was a powerful horse and a great horse as well.
And who that was Charlie Whittingham, wasn't it, trained him?
Yeah, he trained him for a little bit, he was Mel Studi's horse as well.
Oh, really? Huh, I did not know that. That's something, a nice little bit of information then. You also rode L'Angeleur, Kennedy Road, Youth, Fran Felouche, Golden Act, Dahlia. Who was the best horse that you ever rode?
You know what? It's really funny because I rode this horse called Youth, and he won the Canadian International, and he won the Washington, D.C. Internationals as well.
Yeah.
And he was just a tremendous horse. He won the Canadian International by 5 lengths, and he won the Washington, D.C. International back then by 10 lengths. He retired as a 3-year-old, so he never did race again.
Yeah.
But he was just an amazing horse, and he did it so easily as well, and he beat the best in the world.
I think he ended up being the sire of Broadbrush.
I think he was.
Yeah.
He wasn't as great a sire as he was a racehorse, but he was a good one.
Sandy, you got to tell me a little bit about a horse called Charlie Jr. I know that maybe not doesn't stick out to a lot of people come to mind, but that was a special horse that you rode in Laurel back in the day. What made that win so special for you?
Well, it was, John, and Charlie Jr. was just a cheap claimer, but it was probably the most exciting, probably the biggest thrill in my career because it ended up being my 500th win. I think it was back in 1972-73, but it was pretty exciting because at the beginning of the year, my agent, Colin Wick, and myself, we tried to become the first jockey to win 500 races. Remember, Bill Shoemaker actually had the record back then. He had 486 wins. We thought we were kind of crazy trying to go for that goal, but by the end of the year, we ended up with 515 at Laurel Racetrack.
That's awesome.
But I'll never forget, our goal was 500 wins, and that was Charlie Jr.
And that was 500 wins in a year.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Which is incredible.
It's definitely the biggest thrill in my career.
And is there any race that kind of haunts you that you didn't win, Sandy?
You know what? I never won a Kentucky Derby. I finished third a couple of times. Came close, but unfortunately that's one that every single jockey would like to win, but unfortunately it didn't happen, but I'm not going to complain. By the way, it was Keith Stuckey that trained Ancient Title, not Warren.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Warren Studi had a lot of good horses, but yeah, he did. Taken it with Keith Stuckey.
Yeah, huh. And so can a jockey really make a difference on a horse, Sandy?
You know what, Frank, one time Ron Turcotte made an estimation. He said, I think it's 10% rider and 90% horse.
Yeah.
I think he kind of hit the nail on the head with that one because if you don't have the horse, you definitely can't win the race.
Yeah, that's right.
You're on a 1-9 shot and you're coming around the turn and you're supposed to win the race on a 1-9 shot and you tap them on the shoulder and there's nothing there. It's like stepping on the gas pedal.
Sure,
right.
And you don't have any gas left in the tank. So it definitely is a lot to do with the horse. I guess a rider has to have them in the right place, try and pace them properly, make the right moves, but at the same time, you got to have the horse to do it as well.
Now, if you had one jock that you used to be like, oh my God, here comes this guy, and you're head and head turning for home, who would that jock be?
Well, you know what? Here in Canada, it was definitely Robin Platt. You know, he
awesome,
may not
Ryan.
Be a household name in the United States, but he definitely is in Canada.
No doubt about it.
And when I looked over my shoulder, I looked and I go, oh, not Robin again. I know that's an easy answer in Canada.
Yeah.
And also another jockey by the name of Avelino Gomez.
Yeah.
He was a tough one to beat as well. When it comes to the United States, so many great riders in the United States. So many good ones. If you looked over your shoulder, you say, oh, no, not Shoemaker.
Yeah.
Not Pinkai, not McCarron. I could go right down the list. Cordero. Yeah. I could name them all.
Yeah, and I remember distinctly, I was at Santa Anita the day that you came back to ride in the Legends race. I think Lafitte was there, Chris McCarron was there, and on and on. Pat Day was there, and you looked, as all of you guys did, you looked tremendous. But I remember watching you win that race and just saying that Jerry Bailey was in it, and You look like you could get, you know, that you could come back out of retirement that day. And I seen you then last week out at the sales of Fezzik Tipton, and you still look the exact same, Sandy. I mean, like, was that, you know, did you have something that other people don't have that, you know, is hunger inside of you?
Well, I appreciate the compliment, Frank. You know what? I know when I'm getting ready for a race, or, you know, if I'm running full time, I always try to stay in the best shape I could, eat the proper foods. Of course, diet's very important. But you know what? When you retire, it's kind of hard to do that. And I remember when I got the phone call from Lafitte Benkai about the Legends race, and that was about 7 years ago. He asked me, he said, we're trying to get this Legends race together. We want 8 Hall of Fame jockeys, retired jockeys. I said, wow, that's an honor that you'd include me.
Yeah.
And he said, well, your name came up, and we'd definitely like to have you. And I said, well, if you get it put together, you know, it'd be my pleasure, it'd be an honor to ride in it. And I hung the phone up, and I thought, uh-oh. I weigh 122 pounds, and I'm not in very good shape.
Right.
So
wow.
I lived right across the road from Winfield Farms. I started getting on horses. Kind of got back in shape. The weight came off pretty quick. I went to the gym quite often. I didn't have a beer for a month, which
wouldn't serve me.
Very social drinker.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I really watched what I ate, what I drank, and got back in shape. And when I went down there a month later, I weighed 108. So I was in pretty good shape. I was just hoping I would get a good horse, and things worked out.
Yeah.
Ended up on a horse called Tribal Chief. And there you go again.
Yeah.
Get the right horse, you're going to win the race. He won by 6.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was actually owned by Herb Albert, the music.
Tijuana Brass.
Yeah, Tijuana
exactly.
Brass. Yeah.
That's a
you know, it was funny, too, because after I won the race, they said that they're going to run him again in a month. And if I wanted to come down, I could ride him again. I said, no, that's okay.
Yeah. Now, that actually turned out to be your 6,450th winner, right?
It did, actually, yes.
Yeah.
It did. And, you know, I was kind of stuck on 49, and it would have been nice to have won my last race on Toromato. Unfortunately, I finished third, and so I would like to have finished on 50, and never thought in a million years it would happen, but they made that Legends race a betting race, so
yeah.
I ended up with 6,450.
Now, who was your favorite trainer to ride for?
You know what? There's so many trainers that I can mention. Of course, you know, here in Canada, there was a guy called Jim Day who is a tremendous trainer.
I remember Jim.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Samson Farm.
Yeah.
Mainly.
You know, Bob Tiller was an amazing trainer. When I rode for him first call here, he was a leading trainer a number of times. Of course, when I went to California, it was probably Bobby Frankel.
Yeah.
I could mention so many, you know.
Yeah.
Keith Stuckey, of course, too. But Gary Jones, Mike Mitchell, and so many other great trainers from California.
Sure. Who's your best friend in the jocks room?
You know what, Chris McCarron and I, when I went to California, we ended up becoming very good friends. And, you know, it's pretty funny. I broke Shoemaker's record, and Shoemaker's record lasted for over 20 years. Mine got broken the next year by Chris McCarron. We ended up becoming best friends. But I know sometimes we'd be in the jockey's room, and we looked like we're angry at one another, and remember Eddie Delahousie over looking over one time and said, would you guys kiss and make up? I know you're not going to fight. So we were definitely, and we still are. We're still fantastic friends, and I just saw him not too long ago when I was down in Kentucky.
I had the fortune of working with Chris at TVG for a couple of years, and he's a great friend of mine too.
He's a great guy, very intelligent, and
yeah.
Great for horse racing, a great spokesman for horse racing, that's for sure.
Now, I understand that your favorite rider of all time, and one of mine as well, is Bill Shoemaker, one of the best, obviously, to ever sit on top of a horse. That must have been pretty cool, pretty special, after you left Canada and went out to California to spend some time with him, I suppose.
You know what, John, it was. I remember when I first went to California, I went in the jockey's room, and, of course, I'm a big hockey fan, so going in the dressing room in hockey, it'd be like a young hockey player going in and meeting the great Wayne Gretzky.
Right.
Well, for me, going in and meeting Bill Shoemaker was like meeting a movie star.
That's awesome.
I'll never forget going up to him and saying, Mr. Shoemaker, it's an honor to meet you. And, you know, I look forward to riding with you here in California, and I've admired your career. And he said, Sandy, he says, just call me Shu. And he said, I want to wish you luck here. And what I didn't realize, he was the biggest prankster in the jockey's room.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
That's right.
Fill your pockets with shaving cream, burn you on the neck with a hot spoon. And what am I going to say? Thank you, Mr. Shoemaker.
Yeah. Well, Sandy, you're a film star yourself. I mean, there's a lot of young riders that would say the same thing to you.
Well, that's a nice compliment. You know, I don't think that way, but it's nice of you to say. And you know, there's a lot of young riders that do come up and that are very nice to me.
Sure. Now, you mentioned ice hockey, that you're a big fan of ice hockey. And the Forum was right next to Hollywood Park. You could almost throw a stone and hit it. And I understand that you got a job at the Forum.
Yes, I did, actually. I ended up working for the LA Kings. A good friend of mine, Bill Maris, he was the boss of the off-ice officials. And I remember Chris McCarron and I, we had season tickets for about 3 or 4 years together. Our seats, so we had 4 seats right there together. And Bill Maris, who ended up being a good friend of mine, he used to come to the races. We used to play golf together. Come up to my seats one night, and he says, Sandy, no pun intended, but I'm short a guy to work in a penalty box tonight.
Yeah.
Can you come down and work in the box? And I'd never been near a penalty box in my life. I've seen a lot of hockey games, and so I was a little bit nervous, and I said, are you serious? I said, well, what do I have to do? And he said, write down the time the guy goes in when he gets out and let him out at the appropriate time. So I went down, and I did it that night. It was kind of a quiet night, and I had a fantastic time. And I mentioned to Bill, I said, Bill, anytime you want me to do it again, it'd be a pleasure. And he said, well, I got a guy retiring if you want to do it full time. So I gave up my season's tickets, and the
you
next
got in
year,
for free.
And I worked full time for about 4 or 5 years for the LA Kings.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Now, a time that life wasn't that great, I imagine, for you, but your grit and determination got you through it, was when you were diagnosed with skin cancer and were given just a few months to live.
Well, that was a very scary, frank time of my life. And I'm trying to think back now. Geez, I think it was, I'm trying to think of how many years ago it was now. I guess it's 30 years.
Wow.
And I was diagnosed with malignant melanoma, which was in its fifth level. Very scary situation. Survival rate isn't very good.
Yeah.
When you have that diagnosis. But I had a great oncologist, Dr. Malcolm Mitchell. I had a great surgeon, Dr. Helsper, and they helped me through it. I also changed my diet. I actually became macrobiotic for about 2 or 3 years, and I was vegetarian for about 20 years. And I think because of my oncologist giving me the vaccine shots that were experimental, and changing my diet, I think a lot of praying, I think that helped as well.
Yeah, sure. Always helps.
You know, I'm one of the lucky ones, that's for sure.
Yeah. Wow. God, that's it. You were way too young to die.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, you started out as a plumber.
You know what? I worked in it's a place called Sklar's, and I did a little bit of plumbing, but at the same time, I don't think I was going to end up being a plumber. They had, in the summertime, they had people when I was in high school go out and do certain jobs and, you know, just send you to certain places just to see how you liked it.
Yeah.
And, but when I went to the racetrack when I was 17 years old and I was around the horses, I said, this is definitely what I want to do. I want to try and become a jockey. If that doesn't work out, maybe something else on the racetrack. But I just love the outdoors. I love animals and horses in particular.
Huh. Yeah, me too. And I've had the pleasure actually of going to Woodbine a few times. It's one of my favorite tracks. It's
very
clean place, and the turf course is fantastic. The main
I'm actually
track
at Woodbine right now doing the interview.
There you go. People were very friendly and accommodating there. I think you started off as a hot walker there, and I'm sure you've got some pretty close knit people on the backside there that kind of helped you along your way. But it's a great place.
What is your favorite racetrack, Sandy?
You know what? I'd have to say there's a couple. Of course, Santa Anita was one of my favorite tracks. I rode there for 10 years. Of course, my first racetrack here that I started at was Woodbine Racetrack. And as John was saying, it's a beautiful facility, and I'm very proud as a Canadian to, you know, boast about Woodbine Racetrack. That's for sure. If you've never been here, it should be on your bucket list.
Oh, definitely. I've been there. Yes.
It's a great place.
But you know what? I loved Keeneland. Keeneland just had a serenity about it. You know, you go out on the racetrack and it's surrounded by farms, and it was just a fantastic place to ride. And I remember my first day there, I remember saying to the security guard, I watched a couple of races, and I said, sir, could we turn up the volume so I can hear the announcer? And he said, You can turn up the volume all you want, but you're not going to hear anything. You don't have an announcer.
I remember the first time I was at Keeneland, the race was already over when I started watching it, and I was wondering, what the hell is everyone cheering for? You are North America's Outstanding Apprentice Rider, Sandy. Have you had a look at young Evan Roman from Santa Anita? Just won the riding title at Santa Anita. What do you think of him?
I think he's a tremendous rider, and I could go in the jockey's room now at Santa Anita, and I don't think I'd know anybody, but you definitely know his name.
Yeah.
Tremendous rider, and he's got a fantastic career in front of him. Always good young, tremendous riders coming up through the ranks, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Sandy, it's been a pleasure having you on the phone.
A real honor. We appreciate the time.
Yeah, well, thank you, gentlemen.
Taking to speak with
Anytime.
Us.
Anytime.
And so, Sandy, you get back to work now.
All right. I will. Yeah. Do my duties here at Woodbine.
Well, thank you so much. Sandy Hawley, everyone, outstanding man and an outstanding rider. Goodbye, Sandy.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Take care.
All right. So now we'll go off to break here on Riders Up on 1300 ESPN Radio. And Frank Lyons alongside John Gaver. We'll be back. Welcome back to ESPN Radio, 1300 AM. I am Frank Lyons, joined by John Gaver, Stage Door Johnny, as I call him. On the line right now, we have Brendan Walsh, very talented young Irish trainer. Brendan, how are you?
Good, thanks, Frank. Everything's good.
So now you started out in County Cork, Brendan.
Uh-huh.
Well, did you start out wanting to train horses?
Didn't want to train originally, Frank. I wanted to ride them, but one thing led to another, and you know, as I got a little older and the riding wasn't really working out for me, you know, I switched my attentions to wanting to be a trainer, you know, gone from there, and you know, thankfully it's working out. It's working out good.
And what was your young life? Where did you spend your time as a young man?
Well, I was at home, Frank, in Cork. I grew up, you know, around a farm, and you know, I had a pony actually.
Yeah.
And then I went off to the apprentice school in Kildare, and I hated it. And I went back to school, and went back to school and finished school, and then kind of wanted to go back at it again, so I went back doing a few some work on various farms and stuff, and I ended up back at Kildangan.
Joe Osborne.
Back there, Joe Osborne and Darley and Godolphin. And
you were keeping good company.
Yeah, exactly. And then I used to go over to France in the summers as well, Frank, to John Hammond. And eventually I ended up going out to Dubai, and I hooked up with Godolphin. Spent a long time with them, you know, riding work and traveling the world with them with various horses, good horses they were too. You know, and they brought me back here to the States, and I loved it over here, and went back to England, worked for a friend of mine, Mark Wallace.
I know him well.
Assistant there, yeah.
Very talented trainer.
Yeah, very good young trainer too. And spent some time with Mark, and then I ended up back here with Eddie Keneally, and you know, spent 3.5-4 years with Eddie, and that led to going out on my own.
I want to get back to that pony a little bit, Brendan. You actually taught yourself how to ride, I believe, on that pony.
Oh, he did. I know that.
After getting bucked off and run off with a few times, that's probably the most that's the most admirable thing I think so far about your young blossoming training career. That's that takes a lot of determination.
2 years, just pure stubbornness, John. you know, refused to let him get the better of me. It was quite funny. My dad always said, he said I got such a hard time from him. He said I kept going and kept going. He said that's when he first thought of, you know, this is going to be his career, because, you know, no matter what he did, he couldn't, he said a lot of kids would have just thrown their hat at it and given it up.
But, sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
No, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And now, how many brothers and sisters do you have, Brendan?
I have four sisters and two brothers, Frank.
Wow.
Small Irish family, you know.
And are they all at home in Ireland? Or?
Yeah, the sister actually is living in Dubai. She's there with her husband and her kids. They're not working in racing, but her husband is working in finance. And then everybody else is pretty much at home.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, so the first few years for you over here as a trainer weren't that great. I understand you were probably thinking of maybe something to do other than train horses, and then suddenly it all clicked for you.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough. You know, I guess I started out basically with six horses, and it was tough. I mean, God, I look back at this, at my stats and stuff the first year and second year, and you know, I wonder how I survived. But, you know, same thing again, perseverance.
Well, you've got... Go on.
The second year, Terry Street showed, and I think he took me out of a hole and got my name out there and gave me a bit of confidence. And you know, it just went from there. Like I always say, I don't know that I've ever had or will ever have a horse that'll ever do much for me as he did, you know.
Thousand, is that right?
Yeah. Claimed him for 10 and, you know, ran him. He got well beat today. I claimed him, ran him back. He got well beat. Then we ran him for 10 again. He won. And then we brought him to Kentucky. He was doing better. You know, we tweaked a few things with him. And I ran him. He ran second to Power Broker in an allowance race at Churchill that spring. And then we thought, God, this horse might be okay. And you know, we rocked on with him. The following year, he really matured, Frank, and he won a two other then, I believe, at Churchill. And then I got the idea into my head that he really wanted to go long, and I set my sights on the mile and a half race at Parks, the Greenwood Cup, and we prepped him for that, and he won that. And then, you know, after that, he went to Belmont, ran third on the slop in a long race that Scuba won last year for me. And then we went to Santa Anita for the marathon, and sure, he won that by open lengths, and the rest is history. So he was a fantastic horse. The fact that I owned half of him as well myself.
Absolutely.
Definitely, you know, a shot in the arm there.
Paid a lot of bills at the time too, John.
No doubt about it. That's a
fantastic. So he was just a fantastic horse, and I owe him a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, from 10,000 to winning the Breeders' Cup, I don't think there's a lot of people can say that.
No,
it was fantastic, and it was just a great trail, and he put my name out there, and, you know, you just need something like that. I mean, you know, you get the best of trainers, best of young trainers, and they're good horsemen and everything, and, you know, but without the firepower, you can't, it doesn't matter how good you are.
Sure.
You just need to get a little bit of luck as well and find a horse like him, and he can change your whole life and your whole career around, I think.
It's true. I guess we'd be remiss, Frank, if we didn't congratulate Brendan on having such a great spring and at Keeneland, and a better spring and summer at Churchill. You're to be commended. Spotting your horses very well. They showed up to run every time, and I guess maybe you're kind of regrouping a little bit now, giving them a little break. I know you were kind of firing on all cylinders up in Louisville, maybe eyeing Saratoga perhaps with a few?
Yeah, we're sending a small team today, actually. They're shipping up to Saratoga, just like 7 or 8 horses, just that, you know, horses that we think fit really good. I do think this year I've got my nicest team going up there. You know, they're horses that should fit really well up there. You know, we haven't been that successful up there so far, but we're kind of testing the waters, and, you know, you really have to bring the right type of horse up there. And then some of the other horses, we're just backing off them a little bit, you know, trying to get them ready for the fall. You know, horses that were on the go, we'll say a horse like Honorable Judy was on the go all winter at the fairground,
right,
and had a busy spring too. So we're giving him a couple of light months, but he'll be back ready to go in September. And then, you know, a bunch of 2-year-olds as well coming along that, you know, they'll be ready end of July, August. We should have 20, 22-year-olds ready as well. So, it's probably just going to be a quieter if you like, quieter couple of months or 6 weeks for now.
So we're two old broke horse trainers here interviewing you, and you say you've got a bunch of nice two-year-olds. Now, which one should we look out for, Brendan?
I ran a lovely turf horse last week, a Stormy Atlantic horse. Frankie ran second in a maiden at Ellis, first time out. He ran a real nice race. And I ran a really nice Curland filly at Churchill at the end of the meet, who I think, downwind, I think she, you know, typical Curland, I think, as the year goes on and the races stretch out, I think she's going to be pretty nice. And then I've got, you know, everyone, of course, loves their two-year-olds this time of year
before they run.
Before they're exposed, yeah. You know, they're all lovely, going around good 3/8 and halves right now, but it's when we start turning the screw. But there is, you know, we've better stock as the years go along. We seem to be accumulating a bit better stock with some good sire power. And I think if you've that, you've always got a good chance that one or two of them is going to show up and be a nice horse.
That's great. It sounds like you've got a, you know, it's important for all trainers to have a good mix of stock. I mean, you've got some nice allowance horses. You've got some good starter allowance horses, claiming horses that you put in the right spot, younger horses. That's awesome. What do you have, about 40 to 50 head, or has it grown a little more than that?
It's in around 50 now, John, you know. So, you know, it's a nice number. We're still able to keep a good tag on everything. You know, I like to be around them myself as much as I can and that, and keep an eye on them all. So I don't know that it'll ever get too big. But right now it's good. I've got good people working for me, which is important too, and we're able to keep a good handle on it. So that's the main thing.
I think that people usually say about Brendan Walsh is it's your attention to detail.
Yeah, well, I like to be around him. I still gallop a lot of horses, Frank, you know, and you know, I think it's important. You got to be able to speed them and be around them, and you know, I think try and get the best out of every horse.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. I'd hate to ever think that I was missing stuff with horses and wasn't getting the very best out of them all, and that's why I want to be around them as much as I can myself.
And now we should mention Multiplier, the horse that you won the Illinois Derby with. What's a Multiplier up to right now?
Same thing again, like we mentioned earlier. He had a very busy, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't miss a beat since this time last year, guys. So he had a few tough races too as the year went on. He had a tough race in Illinois. He had a tough race in the Preakness. Tough race in Belmont. The signals were there after Belmont that he needed backing off as well. So just giving him an easy time at the moment, and hopefully he'll be back to his old self again in the fall.
Yeah, you got to do that, Brendan. As you know, you can't keep the, you know, it's 12 months a year racing here, not like back home where we have to give them the winter off. And I think giving them time off keeps them around a lot longer.
I think so, Frank. You know, I think for sure they need little breaks from time to time.
Sure.
It's nicer when it's not an enforced break from an injury or something.
Absolutely.
Like that, you know. I think it saves you from getting enforced breaks. So,
yeah.
But you know, this is a good time now. It's hot, and you know, for you know, some of them horses, there isn't the ideal races. Some there is, but look, you know, when they send out the signals and they tell you they need backing off, then you've got to back off, or else you'll be forced to back off.
Absolutely. That's called hurrying up to weight.
Yeah, pay now or pay later, that's for certain.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Brendan, it was lovely to hear your insights.
Yeah, great talking to you. The best, all the best for continued success, and I hope you do well up at Saratoga this summer. We'll be following you, that's for certain.
Absolutely. All right.
Thanks very much, guys.
Yeah, Brendan Walsh, ladies and gentlemen. So lovely to talk to Brendan Walsh there, and also Brian Lynch and Sandy Hawley. It's not
very
a bad
well
show.
Rounded program.
Yeah, Frankie. I know, right?
We have a Hall of Fame jockey, couple of trainers. I mean, what more could you want?
Looking towards the Hall of Fame.
Looking towards the Hall
and
of Fame.
And both of them have a big chance of getting to the Hall of Fame.
They sure do. I mean, they're both very hot this spring and summer, and have a lot of good stock, a lot of bullets to fire down the line.
So speaking of Brendan going to Saratoga, Brian Lynch going to Saratoga, we got our blog.
We got the blog coming up The green sheet.
The green sheet.
www.johngaver.com. G-A-V-E-R. Frankie's going to kick off. Saratoga starts on Saturday, the 21st, I believe, of July. And Frank's going to be giving us picks and a little analysis, maybe a few trainer quotes in there, kind of a unique product we're hoping to roll out, little best bet of the day. And it's going to supplement. I've been doing a handicapping sheet, tip sheet in Kentucky here since last fall. I'll continue to do Ellis, and Frank will supplement those picks with some Saratoga action.
Looking forward to doing that. And so, well, we're about out of time. So tune in. Thank you for tuning in this week, and tune in next week for another great show. All right. John Gaver, Frank Lyons, checking out. Bye-bye.